Welcome back to the programme. We're coming to the end of a year that's seen two changes to our constitution, the repeal of the Eighth Amendment following a vote in May and the removal of the definition of blasphemy as an offence. And now there are more constitutional changes on the horizon, with the government planning a divorce referendum in May next year and a few others yet to be decided. Well, I'm joined in studio along with our other guests by Dr. David Kenny, who's Assistant Professor of Constitutional Law at Trinity College Dublin. First of all, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you.
Let's start by talking about the question of divorce. Mm. That used to be a big convulsion.
Yes, yeah, two big referendums in the 1980s and then 1990s on this question. Very bitter, very divisive, often some very high feelings on both sides and some sort of legendary slogans like hello, divorce, bye-bye, daddy, and so on, designed to play on people's fears of family breakup and so on. And so it seems like we're revisiting this issue. The government says they're planning to hold a referendum in May in principle, but they haven't decided, I believe, whether or not just to propose reducing the amount of time you have to wait for a divorce, or in fact taking out the constitutional restrictions altogether.
Because not unlike the abortion referendum, there was a lot of information beforehand, and it was a very tightly run thing, about what kind of divorce it would be and how it would operate and how long you'd have to be separated.
Absolutely. In the end, that referendum in 1995 was less than 10,000 votes separated the sides. It was 50.3% in favour. It was a tiny, tiny margin. And so, you know, presumably that was only because of these restrictions that sort of, you know, made divorce quite difficult to obtain. So you have to have been living separate and apart for 4 years of the previous five by the time you're applying for divorce. There has to be no prospect of reconciliation between the spouses, and you have to make proper provision for any spouse and child of the marriage.
Yes.
And so those are the restrictions that are in the Constitution. And if we want to change those, if we want to bring that period down, if we want to change anything about the proper provision clause, so on, that requires a constitutional change. So one of the changes that Josepha Madigan was originally proposing was bring the waiting period from 4 years down to two. So make it a little bit quicker for people to reach the point where they can obtain a divorce. But people have asked, if we're going to the people, if we're having a referendum, might we now be in a position where we don't need constitutional controls on divorce, where we can just put whatever restrictions we want in law and let the Oireachtas decide what the best divorce law is? And maybe that would save another referendum in another 20 years if people felt that the constitutional regime was still too restrictive.
Yeah. Generally speaking, lawyers hate things going into the constitution in detail.
This is one where I'm actually very much in favour of the reduction of time. So as well as doing criminal law, I have first-hand experience of family law as well. The reality is for a couple to be living separate and apart for the last 4 out of 5 years, people have moved. We move at such a different pace now to when that referendum was held. People in practice turn up on the day of their divorce a lot of the time in actually very amicable situations, whereby they can often, they come together or they have their new partners or they have new families. Like 4 or 5 years is a very significant period of time for people to move on. And this is looming over them before they can have the finality of being able to move on. There is a precursor, there's a judicial separation that can happen. But really, what, and I shouldn't be saying this because I'm doing myself out of a fee, but what happens essentially is when you go for judicial separation, which is a much shorter time frame, it tidies up an awful lot of the legalities of things in terms of proper provision and the housing and the finances and the children and the access. And really then, by the time the 4 or 5 years comes, it's a rubber stamping exercise. Now, some things can change. I don't want to totally eliminate it. But really, the mechanism for judicial separation is one where people are spending fees to get judicially separated, only then to spend more fees to get divorced and have this literally looming over them for 4 out of 5 years, which can prevent them just from moving on with their lives. And often, you know, it can add to some bitterness for some people. And
society, I mean, may have changed as reflected in the outcome of the two referendums, the two standout referendums, I suppose I should say. But there's still an awful lot of keenness for family values and, you know, they're Catholic people. I don't blame the church on this at all, but people's own beliefs, and they don't like undermining the family.
But you don't have to have that in the Constitution.
Exactly.
You can have family values without having any of these elements. And it, would it be fair to say, David, that our trend constitutionally is to remove these things from the Constitution?
Yeah, I think there's been a realisation that perhaps we were overly keen sometimes to put things on a constitutional level. Divorce was banned in the Constitution when it was written in 1937, so that's been a process of relaxing. But we've seen with the Eighth Amendment that when we insert, you know, very complicated moral and social issues into the Constitution, they can be very complicated consequences that you don't foresee. And even supporters of the spirit of that amendment would probably admit that it had consequences and effects and court cases that people didn't anticipate in the 1980s when that was being written. And so I think there's probably a trend in realising that the Constitution's complicated. You give power to judges and courts to make decisions about what the clause means, and that can create uncertainty and unpredictability, and it takes the power away from the people to lobby politicians to get things changed. We have to go through this long and cumbersome process of amending the Constitution, which can take years to get off the ground. So I think there's a trend to put things in law rather than the Constitution if we're comfortable with that.
Yeah, there's another fear, though. Very often we're quite good at voting about something altogether different in a referendum. Certainly we did it in the European referendums a couple of times. Once it was completely about abortion. I can't remember what the other one was. Or maybe just to give the government a clip in the ear.
Yeah, that's definitely a phenomenon. And there was one great poster in the same-sex marriage referendum where it was, 2015, vote for equality, 2016, vote against austerity. Like, don't take your anger on the government out in this referendum. Please wait till next year, you know. And that's, I think, reflective of something that does happen in Irish referendums. And there was always a sort of a suggestion that the presidential age referendum, which was run alongside same-sex marriage, almost gave something that people could vote against, you know, if they were looking to vote no on something, you can vote no on that. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, the reason for that referendum or not, but that was mooted as a possibility because no one seemed to want to campaign for that referendum, and it failed by a massive margin. So when people are unhappy or angry about
you have to give them something to say no to.
Well, no, I don't necessarily think that. I think that there's a perception perhaps that you can get an anti-establishment vote, and if the government, as they often are, almost always are, proposing the amendment in question, there's a fear that the government supports, the government is not popular, but could come out.
But that hasn't. I mean, that's always happened with the European ones, but partly because Europe is about everything anyway.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't tend to happen, does it, on those sort of issues? I mean, certainly the recent ones, they were very focused. I don't think most people who voted on those were voting on anything else.
Well, maybe the people that were campaigning for the same-sex referendum, I mean, there'll be book. Well, there have been books written about how brilliant they were in their campaign. Mm. Whatever about your point of view, that in the way they campaigned, it was very clever.
I think that the Senate referendums and the Oireachtas Inquiries referendums are interesting ones because there you did have perhaps a sense of the government was proposing reform, the government had sort of some trouble with popularity and austerity at those times, and there was a sort of an unexpected swing against those measures when actually the underlying measures are quite popular. People still support more inquiry of powers to the Oireachtas in general. The Seanad is not terribly popular as an institution overall, and yet we saw those referendums fail. So I think you can have, particularly on political reform questions, a suspicion perhaps of government proposals.
Now the second one on and which do you think it will be, to reduce it to 2 years or to take it out altogether?
I think it probably depends on the reaction of other political parties. I think the government has sort of said it's going to consult people. I suspect if there's any serious pushback, we might just keep it to taking out 2 years rather than opening up the bigger question of proper provision and so on. But if there's broad support for that, we might get the broader question.
Okay, now the second one.
Yes.
Is an interesting one, and this is to do with it's been mooted so many times about the diaspora being allowed to vote in presidential elections.
Yeah.
Explain to me how that would work.
So this would be a proposal to sort of basically separate out the block of voters for presidential elections. At the moment, the same people who vote in Dáil elections vote in the presidential election. It's constitutionally linked. And so what the government has proposed to do is give the sort of Irish diaspora, Irish people living abroad, votes in presidential elections, but not in Oireachtas elections, in Dáil elections. And so essentially to do that, they have to change the constitution to separate out those two electorates, to have a separate electorate for the presidency and for the Dáil. So that's why it's going to referendum. That's why we'll have a vote on it, because there has been this desire to have emigrant voting, but a reluctance perhaps to extend that as far as Dáil elections, perhaps because of the, you know, financial implications of the Dáil has spending powers and so on, and people associate that with taxation and people residing.
Representation and taxation,
yes.
Hand in hand. Would there be a cut-off, you know, in the sense that would it be generational or would it be in terms of years?
Yeah, that would be an interesting question. I mean, in terms of the constitutional change, the easiest thing again might be to sort of have a clause saying that, you know, in principle, all Irish citizens, unless otherwise restricted by law for being outside the country for, you know, some amount of time, are eligible to vote. And if the government wants to set a time limit, the way I had sort of understood the proposal being discussed, it seemed that citizenship might be, of itself enough to entitle you to a vote in a presidential election. The presidency perhaps being seen as a symbolic sort of value-laden institution, perhaps it's a way of including diaspora in that expression of national values, but not giving them a huge direct say in Irish politics, you know, in practice. I think that's the proposal, but we'll have to see what language is ultimately put forward to insert into the constitution.
Yeah, but if you talk about citizenship, you know, if you have a granny,
yes.
You know, you're talking across generations.
I think it's a terrible idea. Particularly the idea of separating them, in the sense that, you know, because a lot of other countries do allow people who live abroad to vote, and they generally do have restrictions. I think in the British case, it's up to 15 years. And so, but what that is saying is that you are still part of this society and community.
Yeah.
And so those issues that you raise about spending. So if we are part of the community for the presidency, we ought to be part of the community for everything else. Mm. But, you know, so it makes no sense, it seems to me, to separate them. It's purely gestural. Yeah.
But the office of the president is so important. It's way too important to be using to make this gesture, precisely because it is symbolic. There's very few ways in which the president can actually communicate to ordinary people, and it's largely through symbol and gesture.
But if you remember Mary Robinson, she was the first kind of that made a very big issue about emigration and the candle in the window and all of that. Like, those who had emigrated appreciated it so much.
They did,
because they still have their Irishness.
They do, but you see, in the citizenship referendum, we changed the basis of citizenship in Ireland. In some ways, it's quite a loose definition now, but it's one that's based on blood relationship, essentially. And that can be very far out. Do you know, you only have to look at Donald Trump and the absolute cabal of Irish Americans that surround him in the White House right now.
And are you not very proud of that?
No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is that, like, if we look at, say, Ireland in the last 8 years, just since 2010, and we look at the amount of change that has occurred for people who actually live here experientially, and that change is then reflected in when they go out and vote for president. And you just don't experience it the same way if you don't live here. And I think there are other ways to make those kinds of gestures.
Seamus?
Yeah, so I think one issue to address is that we'll have the European and local elections next year, that there's people who can vote in those who live in Ireland who are not able to vote in our Oireachtas elections.
Yeah.
And those people, I think, are much more entitled to a vote in the Oireachtas, in the presidency, than people who are abroad. And expanding the franchise to them would be better. Because when it comes to it, those people who live in Ireland and can vote in our Oireachtas elections actually have no vote in any legislative election in the main, unless their own country grants it to them in a country they don't live in. So they can vote for relatively inconsequential positions from a legislative perspective at local level and at European level. But actually, when it comes to national level, there's people living here who don't have a vote. So if I think there's something to be addressed, it's actually that, giving those people the vote, not dealing with people who don't live in the country at all.
I'm looking at it from a slightly different perspective, Maureen, in that I have two siblings who are away. So my eldest sister is out in New York. She's between New York and San Francisco. She utilises her Irishness and her diaspora title massively. She's very much engaged with the Irish-Canadian aspects of things, the Irish-American Fund, all of those. She is much more of an asset to Ireland abroad than she would be here. My brother similarly lives out in San Francisco. They're as much every bit, if not more, I would say, linked and rooted in Ireland, even though they're not physically here. So I'm looking at it from a slightly different perspective. I think they would absolutely embrace and rejoice in the fact if they had some form of, you know, postal tangible vote, yeah, tangible vote, because, and I can say particularly my sister, who's very, very heavily involved in terms of bringing business back to Ireland. She's very involved in the communications end of things through banking. She has plugged for jobs to come to Ireland through the IDA, all of that. She does more for Ireland out there than she ever does here, and yet she is as Irish to the core as I am sitting here, and I'm living in Termonfeckin. So for her to be completely cut off from having an input in terms of anything that happens here, I think is unfair, because a huge amount of our diaspora actually do an awful lot of work that goes unrecognised for the country.
Well, funnily enough, that was one of the issues that Mr. Casey raised in the presidential election. And there are other countries that are very good at doing that.
There are very effective honour systems ways, though, of recognising that kind of work. And France in particular has a good one. There's a number of other countries who have ways of recognising precisely and honouring that kind of work.
Eddie, can I just ask you before we go?
No, just very briefly, I think that it varies. You have people like your sisters in America, in San Francisco. Most of my siblings live abroad, but they have no interest in Ireland.
Right.
You know, to give them their lives. So to give them a vote, they may well be. But the other thing on the divorce, and the divorce one, talking about amicable separations, I have a friend who had a divorce party with her husband and all the friends were invited. Very amicable.
Okay. Yeah. And the third one, we'll have to give this less time. Yes. The third one is, of course, leave women to the end, yeah?
Yes, it's the women's place in the home as it's known, or the sort of the clause saying that women shouldn't be forced by economic necessity to leave the home and pursue economic activity.
To neglect the duties
in the home, yeah. And so this has obviously long been discussed. I think there's been 7 now domestic reports about whether or not we should do away with this clause.
You can't do without a report.
You can't do without a report. And so the government was proposing to run it at the same time as blasphemy, just to remove it, and various groups sort of objected to that on the basis there should be a clause inserted, you know, recognising the work of carers. So we've had an Oireachtas committee report on it last week, and they've suggested we might either sort of insert a symbolic recognition of carers, or we might have another sort of citizens' assembly to discuss this again and maybe discuss putting in a special socioeconomic right for carers or something. So it looks like we could have yet another process, more discussion, another report before we actually vote on that one.
Okay, bring them on, as they say, bring on the reports. Good for business for you guys.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Reports, tribunals, bring them on.
thank you very, very much indeed, David. And we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.